Good afternoon, honourable members, and good afternoon to the department. This should be the second meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Education with the Department of Basic Education on the policy speech of the Minister, Edwin Visage, and also on the budget vote. In this meeting, there were two, according to the department, there are two promotions that took place. The one person that we should congratulate is Mr. Padahachi. He has been promoted to deputy DG.
Well done.
He will tell us deputy DG of what? Because we don't know of what.
Thank you, Chair. Planning, information, and assessment.
Knows who's in charge of infrastructure. Now we know. We don't say planning and information, we just say infrastructure. And the other person that has been promoted, there's two promotions. Offered to Deputy DG, but I'm not sure of what. I'm not sure if it's a Dr. Schumann or Mr. Schumann. Will you just switch on and tell us the correct surname and then DG of what?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's Mr. Anton Schumann, and it is for administration.
Fine. Thanks for that. So everyone knows you in the moment. And we as a committee would like to congratulate you because there's quite a number that's still acting deputy DGs, but at least the two were promoted and appointed. Llewellyn, before we start the meeting proper, will you just give us the apology?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I've only received one apology from Honorable Skosana, who is currently busy in another meeting, but I've also given you the apology for the Office of the Minister and the DG's office.
Fine. You have to just note that the two people that won't be up, the partner will be your DG, and the person appointed in the place of the DG today is Mrs. Carlson and the Minister. Both of them are in Limpopo at this moment. Just sorting out a few challenges there. Thank you. I think what's going to be important, members, is because there's so many people in this meeting today, we actually cracked. Let us just get to know who's in the meeting. We'll start with the members, so the department know exactly, but I know there's people in the department that know who are the members on my right-hand side. But members, introduce yourself, and then the three staff members that we have, and we go to the department. We'll start with Mrs. Carlson, and from Mrs. Carlson, we'll go to everyone that's present in this meeting today. Because there are people present, because we have DEPSA, South Africa, yes, and I'd like them to introduce themselves. And then we're supposed to have Community Law Center of the University of the Western Cape that should be present, and I'm not sure who are the others. I am Hope Mohans, and I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. Honorable Kimmo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon. I'm Nomalunge Lugina, the member of the committee.
Chairperson, at the meeting is Alfred Bojane, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Jake Dikwabo, committee member.
My name is Crosby Moni, a committee member. Tobe.
The only minor member of the committee, the
rest are teachers. Tobe. I'm Topilo Kanyao, also a member of this committee.
Shishi, ke le lokola committee. Ke a leboga.
Good afternoon all, my name is Annette Lovemore. I am a member of this committee and have never been privileged to be a teacher. So
lecture.
I lectured, but I don't purport to have knowledge of education such as the people across me have.
I want to qualify. You know what education will amount. Let's go, there's no members, next. Hello, Alice. No. Oh, it's not. Oh, Baba.
Honorable Chairperson and all of you in Shikan, with Ramina Silence Makubela, member of our committee.
Thank you. Mada.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rilwan Mada. Researcher for the committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Llewellyn Brown, committee secretary for the Portfolio Committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the committee.
Thank you. We go over to the department.
Good afternoon, honourable chair and honourable members. I'm the main officer. I'm the DDG for strategic planning, reporting, and.
Good afternoon, honourable chair and members. My name is Mzita Molale, for CFO in the department.
Hi,
implementation on
now? Does everyone introduce themselves?
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. Carmen van Wyk and the Deputy Minister's Office in the Department of Basic Education.
Are there no visitors on that side? Let's start with our visitors on that end. That's it.
Good afternoon, honourable members and members of the executive of the Department of Basic Education. My name is Lorenzo Wakefield. I'm a researcher in children's rights at the Community Law Centre at the University of the Western Cape. And I'm here as well on behalf of the Right to Education for Children with Disabilities campaign.
Good afternoon, honourable members and members of the Department of Education. My name is Robin Barth. I'm the manager of Inclusive Education Western Cape and also representing the Right to Education for Children with Disabilities campaign.
Good afternoon, honourable members. My name is Barbie Raymond. I'm the manager of the Southern African Association for Learning and Educational Differences, and on behalf of the Right to Education for Children with Disabilities campaign.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for that. And yourself? Introduce yourself too. Oh, all right. Thank you. We'll start our meeting, and I'd like to welcome the Community Law Center from the University of the Western Cape, because in the last meeting they handed in a submission, and when we close the meeting, I allow them for half an hour just to speak in their submission, or 15 minutes. And then I'd just like to welcome SLAC, that was in our previous meeting, including the director from DEPSA. Because, as you know, we do have programs in basic education when it comes to our learners with special needs. And the department is faring quite well on the ground when it comes to that program. Thank you. And I'm just apologizing. I don't think the Honorable Mishwana will speak a lot today in the meeting, because this morning when I went to the nurse, then she was there. I had an allergy, and she had an allergy too, but hers was worse than mine. And she's just from the doctor now, so I'd like to apologize for that. Thank you. All phones have to be off. Thank you. I won't apologize for the phone. All phones have to be off. We start with the meeting now. According to our last meeting, we said that this is going to be a very important meeting today with the department. The instructions to the department was, you are not going to speak a lot in this meeting, and we are going to interrogate your budget. And when it comes to what we really need from the department, we said we needed certain reports. What we received already was, remember, the Deputy Minister gave us an overview. And I'm not sure whether Llewellyn included the overview by the Deputy Minister in your packages. That's one. And the other,
respond to what it was on the conditional grant program. And I hope this was included in your package too, because it speaks to conditional grant, the number, and it speaks to libraries, etc. And I'd like the members to read it. And then what we see from Department 2, and I think this is very good, the action plan to 2025. And I think, especially for new members, this will help you a lot when it comes to education. Very important what we still need from you that we didn't receive. We wanted the report on the summit that the Deputy Minister attended, the 21st century learner. I think that's going to be important. Then a report on NEDU versus planning and delivery oversight units. Because like I think in that meeting, certain people felt that there was some kind of an overlap. Then a report on the teachers' attraction, retention, and access policy. And then the report was also supposed to address teacher demand and supply. But when it comes to the last one, I remember the dean, she said that when the minister delivered this on the 17th of May, she'll touch the demand and supply. But that is also a very important point when it comes to the committee. But remember your attraction, retention, exit policy. Of course, want to know what you're doing about keeping teachers into the system. In the system, because you are having problems when you're sitting with older teachers. So how is that in the young ones? And then the human resource development strategy tool of South Africa, that one we needed. So I think whoever's making notes, that was in 7 days, please let us have this report. Because if we ask for a report in this meeting, then it actually only takes 7 days to reach a member. And now, Mrs. Carlson, I think there was a name, like, of course, that we asked for. I didn't make a note at the top, but I see that it's in here at the bottom, that I want you to, not to speak to, but which you should receive. For certain members were interested in that report. And Mrs. Carlson, as you said, I won't tell you what you speak to, if you question you, but I would like you to give a report when we get programs. By program, but it shouldn't be very long. I don't think you should speak for such a few times.
Okay, I'm going to do a very brief introduction for the teacher of the branch head to speak to their program. Basically, what we intend doing in today's session is not to repeat the entire presentation. We feel that that is a very comprehensive one to cover all the aspects of the work being done in each of those programs. What we saw today then was an opportunity for members to engage with us on the detail of what they were able to take away from that last meeting, but also the subsequent documents that we formatted. And just to speak to two of the documents that you mentioned, we know that they have been forwarded to the Senate, and that is the Deputy Minister's Summit Report, as well as the report of the copy of the presentation in that. But we will probably inquire, I'll inquire by time with the book to actually come in, and then we'll see if we can update the
Then I think, seeing that you're going to speak 5 minutes, let's give each program director not in 5 minutes, because 5 minutes is about the 2 pages you speak in. Let us give each one 2 minutes. All right. Then do you want us to give it 5 minutes each? 2 pages. Okay?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. I also just in by way of introduction want to again reiterate the chairperson's opening comments about the apology from our Director General and from the Ministry for the reasons that we cited. And to say that I think that we were doing a very thorough and a comprehensive presentation by the Director General in the last meeting, which outlined the entire presentation in terms of the annual strategic, the plan, as well as the annual performance plan in relation to the budget assigned to each of the programs. We also saw this components are the sector plan and how this particular sector plan encapsulates the key aspects of the GW agreement, which is the kind of key marching orders for the department. Flowing from that, our sector plan milestones, as well as the key areas of performance, which we consider this particular portfolio committee being a key platform for us to look at each of our quarterly reports responding to those milestones that we have set for ourselves. We also know that this is one measure of accountability and one platform for accountability that we are going to utilize as effectively as possible. We learn from each of our sessions here what kind of detail we need to go back and add, but we also know that we need to share in the separate sessions that we've identified in the last meeting and in previous meetings, but to go into the details of comments that have guided our actions in the operationalizing of those intentions stated in the action plan, but also the opportunity for us to begin to look in detail at what the Minister's announcement in the last budget vote speech, especially those comments relating to the establishing of the delivery units. And in your opening comments, you also referred to that in relation to MeToo. We have actually agreed not to submit to the court, but that there should be a dedicated session for that to be dealt with by the court. We could, of course, add to the documentation that the judge could provide, but we see this as an opportunity to take into further engagement the refinement of the work that's being done practically in the delivery unit, as well as the work that has informed the taking of the meeting forward, which will also come up with discussion and portfolio committee as part of the public engagement around that. The site plan and the annual performance plan have been produced together with detailed operational plans and budgets. These will be commented on by each of the branch heads and the supporting officials here today. These have also been linked, as the DG pointed out in the last meeting, to the individual performance agreements and the work plans, which we hope will further strengthen our accountability measures within the department, and also for us to present on the quarterly basis on each of these aspects of our work. Today's session also, in the last presentation with Zulika, we had an overview of the department's 2012-2013 strategic priorities and interventions. We looked particularly at issues related to learner performance, guiding our key areas and delivery milestones. We also then, in the second part of that presentation, looked at what those sector milestones are as capturing the action plan in quarters. In the third section, we looked at the detailed presentation of performance indicators and our targets. And in the final section of our presentation, we probably looked at the overview of the budget and the issues. That was the main pillars of our presentation in that particular meeting. We then, in this meeting today, would want to look at how each of the programs will be summarizing in the annual performance plan the priorities of the DBE as we have aligned it to the delivery agreement of Outcome 1 governance, which is to improve the quality of basic education and to link it to the action plan for 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025, the document which the chairperson just shared with us. It has been revised and updated, and key areas have been defined for further not only to ourselves in the department, but also for the public to hold us accountable as a department for the delivery of the expectations of the nation as a whole. And I think that as outcome one, we certainly feel the scrutiny of public concerns as well as our own in terms of delivering on those expected outcomes and the targets that we have set for ourselves. We also consider this as being an important point of review and discussion and reflection on our own factors, because it is a very, very important consideration, I think, for each of us in the various areas of specialization, that we don't only operate in silos, but that we have now, through the action plan, have a very, very determined and deliberate set of marching orders begin to guide us in our actions and to guide our own evaluation of performance. And as I said in the earlier comments, these have been tightly aligned to the performance agreement and work plan of every individual responsible for the team members in each class. And we can really take that confidently right to the most junior officials. We have citizens of the DVD having planned the science program, and as that we elaborated on in the annual performance plan. And these five programs we will speak to in turn. The first one being program one is administration. The second is curriculum policy, coach and monitoring. The third program is that of teachers, education, human resources, and institutional development. The fourth program deals with training, information and assessment. And the fifth program deals with educational solutions and services. Now, these programs are obviously also aligned to the and captured in the title of each of the branch heads. Some of them speak more explicitly about the people, but others may be a bit more embedded in the title. But they will be listed individually by each of the branch heads in the engagement with members here, but to unpack the detail of how the budget has been assigned to the program. Since this is an important budget review process, we will consider each of our quarterly reports, how these milestones must reflect the expenditure process as well, and our accountability in terms of public finance. I'm going to stop the chairperson and say that we will then call on each of the program managers, who will go with the branch head, to speak very briefly, maybe just our latest introduction, but simply to call them on the chair to guide the discussion in terms of how the members will come and close and unpack the details of what we're going to do. So I will call them. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll be looking at program one, and it will be Mr. Schmann. Thank you.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you very much. I am speaking around Program 1, the administration of the department. Now, this is the administration of the Department of Basic Education on national level. The provincial education departments are autonomous in this kind of field, and they do their own thing. So we're largely responsible for that, if I can call it the National Department of Basic Education. We are a support service. We support the rest of the programs in trying to do their job. What falls under Program 1 in connection with the budget structure is the Office of the Minister, the Office of the Deputy Minister, Office of the DG. Then we have the offices of the Deputy Directors General as well. That is not the branches. It's only the DDG with the two or three people that supports the DDG office under Program 1. The support services then is the Financial Services Directorate, who is dealing with all the finances in the department, of which the CFO is in charge. We've got the Human Resources Directorate, does all the HR matters or handle all the HR matters within the department, the Training Directorate and the Labor Relations Directorate. Now, there's sometimes a bit of a misunderstanding on the labor relations. This is the labor relations for the department, not for the education sector as such. They've got a different directorate that falls with Mr. Themba Kujana under branch T. The procurement that is done within the department is a directorate under this branch, asset management, information technology, legal services, international relations, which is split in UNESCO and your normal international relations. Then there are two chief directorates that falls with branch R chairperson. Under Ms. Carlson, that is the Strategic Planning Chief Directorate as well as the Communications Directorate. Just to give a bit of background on the department as such, we currently have about 650 staff members within the department. This program or program one also try to give assistance to the provinces. I think the first thing that I want to highlight is that we really try to assist in the financial matters of the provinces concerning their audit reports. There is a small team that we've put together to try to assist. I think if you the information that you have, there's a lot of issues around audited general matters within the provinces. I think six of the provinces have received either qualified or worse audit reports. So we really try to assist them in that matter. There's also issues. Now you would know that there are currently two departments or provincial departments that are under Section 100B, largely due to overspending. The overspending came from the overspending on personnel expenditure. There's quite a number of excess teachers there. Now, although Branch T and the other branches are working in conjunction with us to try and solve that, actually they're more working. We're trying to assist them in their HR planning, HR reporting, those kinds of things, as well as their organigrams to see if we cannot assist there. We also assist in legal matters, although very small, Chair. We get a lot of sightings from attorneys that's been submitted to the department, to the minister and to the DG, wrongly. Due to the delegations, the head of departments are normally responsible for the all these matters within their provincial education department. So these things are sent wrongly to us. There's a huge lot of them that we try to clean up, and we also try to assist these departments in those cases. Chair, I think in a nutshell that is more or less what we're doing.
Thanks a lot for that. Let's look at program 2, the curriculum policy, support and monitoring.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The program is just outlined in page 25. The National Department of Education is focused mainly on quality development, support, and monitoring. This is why Chairperson and I also thinking that. This is one program that depends largely on concurrent functions. But at the core of our responsibility is to improve learner outcome. We've worked out a plan of improving learner outcomes. And I think what one can also say is that part of what we are doing is curriculum innovation through e-education, and some of these objectives have been implemented. We started implementation already from the first of this month. For instance, we've already started developing support measures for multi-grade schools, developing DVDs and developing materials in hard copy to support multi-grade schools, which you find in urban areas also in some schools. I think it's also important to indicate that strengthening and bringing coherence to the implementation of the curriculum remain our focus going forward. As part of the implementation of CAPS, we started this year with grade 10 and the foundation phase. We are continuing next year with the intermediate phase and grade 11, and 2014 with the senior phase and grade 12. I must acknowledge, Chairperson, that whilst we have improved the participation rate in math, science, and technology, the challenge remains, as you correctly acknowledged in your your assessment of the program, that the efforts and the investment that we are making is not really commensurate to the outputs and the outcomes in those particular sections. And it's for that reason that the Minister and the Council of Education Ministers have directed that we reconceptualize the approach. We come up with the new design to improve performance in math and science in particular. But also to call for a math and science summit to bring in partners who come and advise the department and also invest on the improvement of math and science. But I must indicate, Chairperson, that in terms of technology, we're doing exceptionally well. Technology subjects perform at 90% and 80%. The real challenge remains around math and science, and we acknowledge that challenge. Well, Chairperson, I also need to say that in terms of developing quality learning material in the form of delivery of workbooks, last year we delivered 24 million workbooks. This year we've already delivered workbook 2 and workbook 1, 64 million workbooks in math and science textbooks for grade 10, 11, and 12. So going forward, we'll continue to deliver on this objective as well. But we are doing exceptionally well, and I have shared a copy of our report in terms of the delivery of workbooks and textbooks with honorable members of Perusa. As we stand, we are at 100% both workbook 1. The number of queries in this regard and areas where we have not delivered has drastically reduced almost. I must also indicate that the other area of delivery is around school libraries. We take the challenge. The Minister has acknowledged that the basic education sector alone will never be able to deliver fully on this objective. We've met with the Department of Arts and Culture to try and work together so that we impact much more meaningfully in terms of delivery in this area. We will be meeting with municipalities to try and explore possibilities of using the MIG fund also to enhance delivery in this regard. Chairperson, in respect of ECD, as you all know, in terms of access, we are doing very well. The real challenge is around improving quality, it's around the delivery of the curriculum, it's around ensuring that all ECD practitioners at least have the NQF level 4. It's also making sure that norms and standards for funding of ECD centers is fully implemented throughout the country. And lastly, we are looking forward to strengthen our working together, our partnership between social development and education, so that we perform much better than we do. At the last conference convened by social development, and the last one, Chairperson, is around inclusive education. Well, the delivery of the department is not fully represented in terms of what is captured on this document. There are other areas where we are delivering on. For instance, we've started in terms of making sure that we provide in respect of inclusive education. Production of learning and teaching support material in Braille has happened substantially in the outgone financial year, and we intend to improve that going forward. We have also improved materials in other forms of learners with learning disabilities, not only Braille, the other forms of learning we have also delivered on that one. We've started on a project on the development of South African Sign Language as a subject, which will be a project delivered for the first time in the history of education in this country. And I'm sure that you'll appreciate the fact that sign language is not even recognized in this country as an official language. And we are engaged with the Department of Arts and Culture to make sure that that is recognized as well. We have produced in a draft form a framework to ensure is the grade 9, which is something that would lead either to a certificate or recognition of the learning. Our focus there will be to provide skills programs, and then we'll also be developing a curriculum for schools of skills, consistent with your research paper that you produced, I think, a year or so ago, that talked about the two-stream model and making sure that we accommodate learners with them.
Thanks a lot for that. And thank you for referring to a document that was produced. The program 3, I think it's Mr. Mariana. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. As indicated, that the purpose of the program is to promote quality teaching and institutional performance through the effective supply, development, and utilization of human resources. And there are 4 sub-programs that we have. One is the program management, teachers, education, human resources, and institutional development. Second is education, human resource management, education, human resource development, as well as the curriculum and professional development unit. Just to indicate that we are, each and every sub-program has got quite a number of initiatives. When we focus our attention on issues of teacher development, we are working very, very closely with teacher unions in terms of issues of curriculum, issues on caps, also provinces, because it's a concurrent function. We are working with provinces in terms of focusing on the key areas like your mathematics and science for training educators on. One could say that so far we have in total had those training. We have achieved more than 64% of the teaching core in terms of the professional development. In terms of the aspects around the working with the school governing bodies to strengthen the governance of schools, we have then already a very successful election period of the school governing bodies, which ended in March. But we are continuing in writing, calling comments, or inviting input in order to strengthen that particular sector in terms of strengthening the governance of schools. While remaining with issues of the district, we have called for public comments on how we align the roles and responsibilities of the district by coming up with a draft policy. Because previously, you recall that we used to have only guidelines. Now it was difficult to manage such a sector in terms of all the responsibility of the district only with guidelines. We are pushing towards us having finally a policy in that regard. Another key critical area of focus is more about human resource management, which is a critical aspect that deals with the teacher supply, demand, as well as utilization, which provides sometimes with some bottlenecks around how you manage your excess teachers, which causes a problem around Garuthak educators. It's a key area that we're focusing on. HECOM has directed us to develop a very, very clear guideline on how this thing can be once and for all be dealt with, so that we can be able to support provinces. Lastly, there is an issue that we are also looking into, because we know that the compensation of employees is providing a very serious problem in terms of the budget of education as such. So we will be setting up the system, working with Treasury in terms of looking into the issue of PESA as well as Bulindia, so that we can be able to deal with this thing of the ghost teachers and the such. We are working very, very closely with the CPSA in terms of dealing with the matter of the teacher profile, because one of the key issues is how do we have the biographic information for each a permanent teacher in the system, so that the utilization and the training of the teacher is correctly captured in the process. Furthermore, so that you manage the tempering with TESAS, we are now having a program called the Business Intelligence, which we are training the departmental officials, including the head of the department, on the business intelligence, so that at the tip of the battery, they could be able to see where there are the any deviations in the system, because this thing is very, very much critical. That is, in a nutshell, the issues that we are managing. But just to say, when you look in terms of how to strengthen and issues around learner performance that Mr. Moli refers to, that it cannot only be the role of the department to deal with the issue of learner performance. What we have done, we have written a circular out to them so that parents must participate with regard to monitoring of this particular aspect, whether the results of ANA are communicated, whether parents do understand and see their role in terms of the workbook utilization. Because I mean, we've spent a lot of resources on the workbook, but what we need to look into is how those workbooks are utilized, so that parents can be able to engage even the learners, whether they can see what is it that is being done on a regular basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Program two, on planning information and assessment. I think it's a bad issue. So, Mr. Chopper, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This branch covers areas that deal with planning, implementation, and assessment areas. I'll briefly try to cover six main areas that the branch deals with. The first is that the branch is responsible for the administration of the annual national assessment, and that involves the setting of the papers, which are both externally, internally reviewed, as well as externally reviewed as well by a panel of national and international experts. And for the 2012 year, when the test is written in September, it will involve also that the department deals with the printing, packing, and the distribution. And we've done an analysis of the 2011 administration, and the areas of weaknesses have been identified, and these have been built into being strengthened in the 2012 management plan. In addition, the administration involves the capturing of the learners that have been arrived from grades 1 to 6 and 9 on a database that we refer to as the GET mainframe, on which we will capture all the results of the learners for grades 3, 6, and 9. And the tests will be written in September. Then we will, thereafter, there will be marking of these tests. 3, 6, and 9 will be marked at centralized venues in provinces, and there will be a selected sample for the other grades 1, 2, 4, and 5, where a sample will be taken for each district, with a view that the report will be available for the minister to release in September. So that's in one area. The key function is to administer the ANA, provide information to the system, which then links up with curriculum. The other is also to, the unit is responsible for the country's involvement in international tests, such as SACMET, which released the last report, with preparations are underway for the next one. Calls and TIMS was conducted, and we will have those reports coming out in December 2012. So that's on the ANA. The other area covers the examinations. There are three exams conducted. The NSE, as we know, for the grade 12, as well as the supplementary examination.
The senior certificate is also conducted in May and June, and this involves the setting of over 260 papers, which are then moderated internally, externally by Uma Lucy as well, and together with provincial departments, this is on an annual basis until we write the exams in October, November, leading up to its release. So there are a number of examining panels that are employed, as well as markers and so forth in terms of the NSE itself. So that's the other area that this branch is involved in, to ensure that there's a credible examination in terms of the three exams that we conduct. The branch is also involved in dealing with school funding, norms for school funding, and in 2011-12, a bid was made to deal with the issue of no-fee schools as well as fee-paying schools. And while no funding was made available for 2012-13, there is funding in the budget for 13-14, which will mean that no-fee schools can be funded at the quintile 1 amount, and quintile 4 and schools, 4 and 5 schools who want to opt to be fee-paying schools could do that. So that would be the work in preparation for the 13-14 year, as well as finalizing a proposal in terms of the funding of fee-paying schools. On the grade art, we provide support to the curriculum in terms of the school funding norms, and there again, a bid has been made as well for additional funding, which was successful in terms of providing funds for 13 and 14. So provincial grade art ECD plans are evaluated by the department, and these will be made available to the public, and the provincial departments need to publish them on the website. So the unit does monitoring and support in terms of trying to achieve that goal towards universal grade art. A unit that's in this branch is budget monitoring and support, which at the moment is basically made up of four people. On a monthly basis, there's an analysis of the provincial department's budget and expenditures, which is provided to the DG and the minister, and there are provincial visits as well to provide support in terms of this area. Mention has been made of compensation being an item of over expenditure. There are a few other areas of underspending. These are dealt with by this unit in terms of trying to identify them and also to assist provinces. The goal is that by 2014 is to assist provinces all nine to have unqualified audits. But the unit works with its other colleagues across the department. At the moment, we have deployed one colleague to be in the FOPO full time until the Section 100 is over. The other unit dealing with information management system, mention has been made of the BI. This unit basically deals with the development and the maintenance and support to the system, and is to provide also credible statistics in terms of developing instruments and collecting the data in terms of the annual school survey from provinces, from schools directly. And by the end of this year, the LURIS itself will be able to check the movement of learners. We have two protocols with the Department of Home Affairs, which assist in terms of dealing with IBs for learners, and there's a sharing of data in that regard, as well as in the other protocol is with the Department of Social Development, looking at the issue of social grants and the sharing of information in that regard. The last critical area is in terms of infrastructure. The department has previously been involved in dealing with policy in this area, but now is also dealing with building itself. In two key areas, it manages the education infrastructure grant, which is transferred to provinces, but it's in terms of also monitoring and ensuring that the plans that provinces have set out are adhered to, and that their reports and evaluations in terms of that. And the other key program is the CD, dealing with inappropriate schools, mainly in the Eastern Cape, and basic services. In concluding, Honorable Chair, you may see that you will see in the document that the delivery unit and the NEDU is also part of the branch, but they report directly to the Minister and the DG.
Thanks a lot for that. There are number five, program number five, and that one is educational provide support towards the achievement of educational outcomes. I think as we all know that the core business of education is curriculum. However, we also know that the environment within which learners learn and the health and wellness of the learners is as important as the achievements, the outcomes that we achieve. So the branch has three primary objectives. The one is to enhance the current basket of educational support services to learners, with particular reference to poor communities within the framework of care and support. Second is to create a safe teaching and learning environment at all public schools. And thirdly, to contribute to learner retention by increasing the number of schools that participate in extracurricular activities. This year, we've identified key programs that will be a priority. The first one is the expansion of the integrated school health program. Honorable members, we know that we have been doing health screening in schools, but for quite some time we've been focusing on grade one in Taiwan. But with the Department of Health, we have developed a joint plan, which focuses on the expansion of the program. I will indicate which grade we will be focusing on this year. But the plan offers a comprehensive and integrated package of health services, including sexual and reproductive health programs. And the health services package includes health screening, for instance, eye testing, ERCs, TB, limited on-site services, including dewormings, immunization, and extensive health education programs, including hygiene, TB, safety, drug, support around suicide, etc., etc. As I indicated, it's a program that we implemented together with the Department of Health, and the school health team that will be available for school health screening includes two nurses and health promoters. We've been very fortunate to have a number of NGOs and other providers like Telepepa, etc., that are supporting us in the program. And obviously central to the program is the efficiency of the medical system, which will be through clinics but also through on-site mobile units that will be made available by the Department of Health. The screening for 2012-2013 will focus on grade one, early in the, because that's the stage for early intervention during the period of rapid development. Grade 4, which is the period just before the onset of puberty. Grade 8, which signifies the transition from primary to secondary school, and it's a stage that is associated with increased risk behavior. We're also focusing on grade 10 because of the large dropout challenges that we experience in those grades. And so we're trying to check whether some of the causes are not health-related barriers. And also focusing on learners recruiting grades to identify health barriers to learning. As I indicated, there will be a mixed model of referrals, both to community clinics but also to mobile clinics. The second program, Honorable Chair, the Portfolio Committee will recall that last year we finalized the HIV and AIDS strategy, which was presented and was approved by me. And the focus this year is the implementation of the strategy, with a particular emphasis on the life skills program, with the life orientation. We are finalizing the scripted lesson plan to support teachers with that, but also to focus on an area that has been neglected for a while, and that is the educational wellness program. Because we know that educators themselves have the challenge of the terminal disease in this area. Again, even in that program, we're working with partners that have been working in the area for quite some time. The third program is to expand the program that we've had with staff. We've had a very successful program with staff aimed at a model of adopted school, which is linking police stations with schools and assisting them to put safety committees in place, and we have safety programs. We have a database of schools that have been linked, and this year we're increasing a problem in our school. What leads the revival of good sport through the introduction of magnificent women and the again, honorable members, we know that the program was launched by Bruce Minister, and last year we had a successful culmination of the provincial only with the final team just about 3 weeks ago. But we also know that PE is now formally in the curriculum and is covered as part of the health training. What we will be providing is extra, with working with SAFPOC and SRSA, is to provide extra coaching programs for teachers that are participating in school sports. SRSA has allocated, they announced the launch around 30 million towards the securing sports equipment for schools. We sent out an audit form to schools to indicate what facilities and equipment they have. Clearly, the issue of facilities is an issue that we're working with COSTAR around the use of community facilities where possible. SASCA is a big program, school collaborative effort that we will be focusing on this year. And lastly, is the efficient implementation of the NSMP. Honorable members will know that we increased to secondary schools. This year, we were able to secure for this financial year an allocation for equipment for primary schools, because for the secondary schools, a year before the implementation of the equipment, provided resources for equipment. So this year, we were able to request from Treasury and it was allocated some resources towards supporting primary schools which have been struggling with equipment. I think the issue of cooking spaces is a challenge. It is being dealt with school infrastructure, but through our partners that we're working with, like NetMax and Tiger Brands, we are making headway around the provision of mobile kitchen to the schools. Thank you,
Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you
for that.
Thank you.
Report, short report from the department. Is there any additions to this?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make one small addition, which was an addition of the program one, which was that we raised in the previous presentation, which was that there is a new unit in the Rancho Isles, which is responsible for the
Thanks a lot, Mrs. Carlson. I'm opening the programs to questions. So we start now to do all the programs will work one by one.
Yeah.
You see that we can at least ask quite a number of questions. So we're going to start with program one, and that is on administration. And seeing that we eight, nine members. I'm giving each member two questions each. Two questions each. We have the Ms. Honorable Lovemore. Honorable Mishwana. Second. Who's the other? Yes, only program one. So you can decide, you know, whether you're going to do one or which program you're going to do. Yes, two. Yes, I'm doing two per program. Yes, per program. All right, and Honorable Gina. So it's only three people that's asking questions. We start with Honorable Lapo, Honorable Mishwana, Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just before I start my questions, I just want to note again that on page 15 of the annual performance plan are listed the court rulings supposedly from the previous year. In fact, they're not. They are copied and pasted from the previous report.
Mm-hmm.
These are not updated, and it would be interesting to get at some stage the updated quarterly. With respect to Program 1, I have very simple questions. There were a number of targets, or two targets specifically, that were included in the previous year's annual performance plan and are not included in this year's performance plan. The one is the percentage of court cases successfully resolved. It's not in the performance plan. The other is the percentage of queries from provincial education departments successfully resolved. We previously had targets. We don't have any more. So those are the two that have been dropped entirely. There's no mention about action to reduce the number. And I know this is a very broad question, but there's no mention about action to reduce the number of cases being brought against the department. It might involve, for instance, just making sure that every provincial head and the district managers are fully aware of and understanding the laws that govern basic education. There are so many. So just a comment on that, specifically the dropping of what appear to be very important targets. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that.
to basically say yes, some are, or very many thousands of those have been saved, they have been developed, but then they are not used, you know. I'm raising this because you have this problem to say yes, you go on and say develop, etc. But then, I mean, you just suppose that is the actual usage of those particular educators in our institution. And to say then, why? Yeah, I think that is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Why as you do that? That's the first thing. I mean, some of us will be jumping up and down and say, develop more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I'm just throwing this to say, why are you doing that? Number one. Second thing, have you been able to identify areas exactly where these educators will go, etc.? Because at the moment, for example, you have, you know, in the earlier this problem in the Eastern Cape more, where more than 4,000 educators are having this kind of problem, really. So therefore, say, what is it that the department is doing to handle that particular issue?
I think people must be intimidating. People are intimidating. Just switch off. Now I've shown you at my right hand side. The question you asked is program 3 questions. But don't worry. I think people, what will it do? Because people are becoming confused with the different programs. They're not sure whether it's program 1 or program 2 or program 3. Because at the moment you've got 2 questions. That is in program 3. So I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to open, is it okay if I open it? We do program 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Chair, but just remember that if there are 5 programs, 2 questions per program makes 10 questions.
Honorable Lamont, let me be the judge on that one.
I know.
Honorable Lord, you mustn't judge. Let me be the judge on that one. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to ask program 1 question. Program 1. I'm going to have 2 program 1 questions, and from there, we're going to allow you to answer program 1, because you still owe me an answer on my one of last week, on international relations. That question. Hmm? Is program 1?
Yes.
Yes. Honorable, if you're going to answer that, then 2, 3, 4, and 5, we're going to do together. Because now I'm just seeing a whole lot of hands for program 1. Because when people hear what questions others are asking, they have to come on board. Because now they remember this is the program. Thank you.
Maybe for now, the answer will possibly be a very brief comment,
mm-hmm.
but maybe a fuller one, a more detailed one in future. The issue of assisting provinces
mm-hmm.
with the audit report, like Mr. Schumann was saying, I mean, looking at that, you know, qualified disclaimer, there are just too many. So I'm wondering whether the department cannot just give us some detail. What is it that what plan is there to make sure that we move away from those kinds of reports? As I said, that might just be brief for now. Yeah.
Before we get the Honourable Mufashara to speak, what I'd like to add on to that one is if we have rollovers too. And the rollovers is normally in infrastructure. The rollovers, what I want you to do there is, well, the CFO will have to help you with this question. You know, to speak to conditional grant. The rollover, although infrastructure is under program 4, and then at the same time, how do you help? Because I made notes on these little things when it comes to unauthorized expenditure. Because the honorable members spoke already to the qualifications. Because I was interested in the qualifications too.
because you have provinces that sit with the disclaimers. I think there's one with adverse reports. And then there are some that move from qualified, from unqualified to qualified reports. For example, like KwaZulu-Natal, that retrogress, whatever the word is, you know, going backwards. On from Fonshana?
I'm not too sure now, Chair. But I think it's linked to what my colleague, Dikobo, has already alluded to. Mine concerns the office space, both at head office. I know we've got our own building now, which hopefully has been paid off, and we are not owing anybody. Unless we go into the Rock Shabamo scenario, you know. Is there any way where head office administratively will help provinces renting out offices and other buildings?
Does that make sense?
Yes, because I know what you're reading to. On World Class, please.
Thanks. Still on administration. I'm still on program one, Chair. Administration.
Yes, it's not program one, but it takes along with program one.
Yes. My interest will be on filling of vacancies or strategic positions. Yes. I don't see clear commitment to saying they will be filled and by when and so on. So can we be assured, I might have missed that part, can we be assured that it's well kept up and high on the agenda of the department?
Thank you. And Mr. Schoeman, you still have the question of last week on international affairs. You can just answer briefly because I think you'll have to leave this to us in writing, the one I asked. Thank you,
Honourable Chair. The first question from Honourable Lovemore on the percentages of the court cases and queries, I think that was just the raise to us. We had a bit of trouble to report around that, so we changed the indicators a bit on that one. How do we reduce court cases?
I'm sorry, Chair, I really am sorry to interrupt. But saying we had a bit of trouble, so we changed it, doesn't tell me actually anything. What
okay.
was the
oh, you want to
what was the trouble?
Okay. Okay.
On the last one,
yes.
I think that should have been like just a follow up. And then what I think you should add in is the age, you know, of your court cases in writing you give it to us. Thank you. Because on the last one, wants to be writing to.
The court cases, as I said, Honourable Chair, there's quite a number of cases that are referred to the department that actually are handled within the provinces. What we are doing at the moment is we created a database to try to manage this from national side and especially then try to assist that these things don't get too old at the moment. We've received input from 8 of the provinces. We're awaiting Western Cape at the moment, but they promised us that their information will be in by the end of this week. So by then having this database, we can then follow up from our side to see how progress are made in these kinds of things. What we've further done is and I must maybe just explain something else, is we've created a kind of a structure within the department to assist with administrative issues and also then to assist where Mr. Pariaji's branch is also available. People then go to provinces, visit provinces. I'm sorry. Okay, Chair, I'm sorry. What we've created is a structure in the department then to go to provinces and assist. They go on a quarterly basis and have meetings with provincial education departments on administrative issues like HR matters and financial matters and procurement matters. We've now included that a legal services portion will be added to that. So they will then also then visit provinces and see if they will identify problems within these kinds of things and then assist from that side. So we've got the database that we're following up at the moment, as well as we've included now legal services within this structure to assist with that. The question from the norms and the standards, I think Mr. Pariaji will deal with that one. Then the training, Mr. Kojana will deal with that. Chairperson, the one around international relations that you've put to us, there's currently three. I've got it here, I just want to get it quickly. Here it is. In the department, under the Department of Basic Education, we currently have three international agreements. The one is with the European Union, a financing agreement with the European Commission and the public concerning the primary education sector. Then we've got one with Germany. There's an agreement between Germany and South Africa. This is bilingual secondary school qualifications on the national senior certificate with German schools in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Pretoria. And the last one that we have is with the United States of America. This is for increased access to quality education and training. But we will put that in writing to you. That's the three of them.
And then the questions that were asked by the caller, Mpashana, and myself, I'd have to go to the CSO to answer.
Okay.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
Chair of the Commission to add something before you set
the on the
international,
yes.
If I may just speak to the items that are the legal objections to the paper under the last one. That constitutes in this document a section of the strategic overview for the rich data performance plan will be touched. So the lessons of to those critical course rulings is how they will impact on things more generally in terms of how the work in provinces and certain court cases, how there's a finding will have impact in terms of how we deliver on the mandate in the provinces and our provincial and legal representatives report on a regular basis at a HEDCOM structure where all of these provincial responses to a particular court ruling must be accountable. Now at that level, we have to include it, whether it seems dated or not, the impact will still be solved in terms of how you roll out your response to that and your planning around that. And as Mrs. Kuman has correctly said, legal finding for rulings will require a detailed management by the national structure so that we ensure that there is uniformity in terms of its application across the board. When there's a finding in terms of languages or whatever, it will have a ripple effect across the country, so you would need to address that. So in terms of our annual performance planning, through the HEDCOM structure for oversight, we would need to include those aspects as ongoing matters, so they can't be excluded from it. So it's not about indicators, this is about the strategic context within which that is from the plan. So I think if I may, on the chair, Also, there's been requests that I haven't answered the question. Maybe for the question to be posed to us formally, so that we respond exactly to the question posed in the written response.
Fine.
So,
that's fine.
Okay,
I'll have that one. Thank you.
Order on the
bottom.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Fine, the chair's off.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The question was the assistance to the provinces. As this gentleman indicated, that the team that goes to the provinces, that is led by the provincial budget monitoring support team. They go to the provinces on a regular basis. They discuss all the outcomes that are in the audit report and request reports from the provinces on a regular basis. The reports are then collected and submitted to the ministers. But for instance, Athens, there's a province that always had a problem of Athens. And in the last audit report, they did not even a negative view on Athens because they have been provide the report collection. And then the issue of Goro was, I think that really was the...
Now what I want to know is, and I will not cover that. When it comes to how do you assist, how do you assist the provinces when it comes to audit challenges? And then, when it comes to rollovers itself, because the person looks at the report of, another report here of appropriation, they speak to, quite a number when it comes to, and we know too when it comes to infrastructure, that some provinces will understand that at the moment, in the third quarter report, Eastern Cape was understanding. So we want to know what you do, and even if there's other rollovers, from the different provinces, or to speak it out to the system.
That is something that we can consider, that we can attend to. But to get to the project, we need to that one. We focus mainly on the audit outcomes and the budget management and expenditure. But the role of us has never focused on that, but we can do that. And then on the office space as well, we have not registered any
issues on the board. I don't know if Ms. Skuman has anything that you would like to say? Ma'am? All right. Mr. Skuman, before we go to the vacancies, and I don't think when it comes to the audit, the agency board, I'm satisfied with the audit. Because we spoke to, I got to belabor the point because we stay longer. We spoke about the unauthorized expenditure tool. Because you do say there is a kind of monitoring that you are doing, but it's not that good. Because remember in the previous year, we had a lot of unauthorized expenditure, etc. And if you look at the report of appropriations, there you'll see, the overspending that we're having. I can even give you the overspending of the third quarter. And I would like to answer on vacancies. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you, Honourable Chair. The renting of the offices in the provinces, we haven't received any requests around that. Just to confirm that. There was also a question on the assisting of the provinces in general. I don't know if I must repeat the answer, but I think we've said that we have put a team together around certain issues where we assist. We have got a plan. We visit them four times a year on that. We also then list all the problems that they have. We try to assist in those problems. We also inform the Minister and the Director General around that. We bring those issues under the attention of the heads of education departments in the head committees that take place once a month, Honourable Chair. the question around the vacancies. Honorable Chair, I indicated that we have identified the vacancies or the critical posts. Around the Deputy Directors General, there are only two posts that are not permanently filled at the moment. That is in Branch C, where Mr. Mwele is acting, and in Branch D, where Mr. Themba Kojana is acting. Chief Directors, there's two vacancies in Mr. Mwele's branch. They have been advertised. They will be filled shortly. And there's not really vacancies on director level, and deputy directors, there's a couple that we've advertised now that will be filled shortly. Our personnel expenditure, I think the spending pattern is very good at the moment. We're around about 95-96%, so we don't really have a lot of extra money around that we can spend.
Thanks a lot. Because, like what we know, that each province will come to the agency court as a turnaround strategy. And you just partly tell us, you know, what you do. There's only part monitoring that you are doing. And in the thing is, when it comes to SCORPA, they speak about all the unauthorized expenditure. And there's a lot of wasteful and fruitless expenditure. And I think it will be important for us to get a written report on how we're looking at it. Because one of these days we will be invited to SCORPA, then we will have to answer. Thank you. I think what we're going to do now, seeing that it wasn't that good the way we wanted to do it, let's look at 2, 3, 4, and 5. Because we want to confuse people. That was a decision we took while we were outside our secrecy. Because you so much want us to go over by program. Because we want to confuse each other. So let us start, and let me put it this way. I'm giving each one 4 questions. In order, we start in right there with Honorable Dudley. Then we go to Honorable Makubera. Then we go to Honorable Lovemore. And then it's Mashishi. Honorable Magisha. Hanyako. Honorable Smiles. Remember you after Hanyako. Honorable Hanyako. Honorable the Corbett. Honorable Panshana. Then we stop with Honorable Gina. And I'm not sure whether Honorable Moni is going to take a bite too. I find just before Honorable Dina. Fine, let us start.
Thank you, Chair. I'll stick, all my questions will be with the last program, and to start with the finalizing of the last skills content. Can you, and this might even be better in writing, let me know how public, to what degree has there been any public participation in terms of what people feel is right for their children? And if there hasn't been, how have you come to the conclusion as to what you're going to use, what sources you're going to use in terms of this, and what success have they had where those people's approach has been used? We're going to need to know that in a fair amount of detail.
I think if we get through this fast, okay. Yes, I think that would be my
answer. Okay. Because this is a very sensitive issue with parents, and you don't want to have the controversy that you could have. The summer before it actually hits the schools, you really do need to have people with a bit of peace of mind about that. Then on the bullying increasing, what specifically do you plan to do within this budget in terms of what approach are you going to take to that? Then the training of teachers to do with PE. Okay, and the training of teachers with regard to PE, is there a special plan that you have that you've set in? When will it be rolled out? You know, how is that going to be? Just a little more detail on that. And then lastly, you mentioned the mobile kitchen. What are you aiming at there? Is there a specific amount of mobile kitchens? Who are you targeting? What do you plan to do within this particular budget? So what do we hope to see within this year's budget? Thanks.
Thanks for that. What I'd like to add on to the physical education, whether we're going to employ physical education teachers in schools, I think that's going to be important. Just off the mic there. And then the other thing, when it comes to physical education, on what Dudley is speaking to training. And we know that when it comes to those, you can't take any teacher to do physical education. Because if a child is hurt, when it comes to physical, the teacher must be trained. In physical education, who's going to take responsibility? Thank you. Honorable Makubela, people just follow your orders, that's just a speaking.
Thanks, sir. I've got two, not three. The first is with regard to the ANA outcomes or findings, whether we are able to make some interventions in terms of those weaknesses. Can we be able to say that we have factored all of those so that we improve the situation, or we haven't done much in that regard? The second, I heard here that NIDU and DU report directly to the minister. Now, my interest will be in understanding whether that does not give any problem. And then what role does the unit do yourself? What becomes your role then? If they don't necessarily account to me. The last one, we always talk about inclusive education, and that generally that's what we want to do in the system. At times, the actual objectives per financial year get blend. You are not able to tell that this particular year, this is what we are going to be achieving, as opposed to what we achieved the previous year and what we may want to achieve next financial year. So it's like we can keep talking some in-quotes, some rhetoric around it, and not be able to have tangible outcomes and say, this is what we have actually achieved in this year, in addition or accumulative to what we did the previous financial year. So just that elaboration to say this is what we have been able to do, tracking it from particular or previous years, even if it means two previous financial years to where we are today and where we're heading to. Thanks.
Fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start where my colleague left off on inclusive education. I don't see any targets on inclusive education. Inclusive education.
Yes.
There might, it was, for instance, Braille books were spoken about, sign language was spoken about, but I won't go into a whole lot of detail. I'm sure all of us have had similar interactions. I had a meeting recently with a young teacher who has been teaching for a year. This is her second year of teaching. She is so disillusioned. She's at an inclusive school. But she's so disillusioned with the term inclusive and how it's applied. She's decided to make a difference. She's now doing further studies in special needs education, etc. But she told me when children are having learning problems, they are labelled naughty or they are labelled hyperactive, and they all just put on Ritalin, and that people avoid the problem. So we deal with the obvious. The things that we can deal with easily, like, when I say easily, I mean the solutions are relatively obvious, like providing Braille books, etc., or severe learning disabilities. But children who perhaps have concentration problems, etc., I know it becomes far more difficult to measure. But the fact is, there's nothing in here. There's nothing in the strat plan. And we might have a lot of detail, if you do, I'd like to know about it. I think we all would, because it certainly is something that is spoken about, but it doesn't appear in the strategic plan. The second issue is grade R teachers. Grade R teachers and teaching, well, grade R and ECD as well, has been highlighted by the President, for instance, in his Sona speech, the importance of it. Now, I had a media statement today because grade R teachers in the Eastern Cape have not been paid for the last 2 months. The fact is the grade R teachers are not seen as teachers. They are not employed as teachers. They are paid stipends. They are on a contract. They don't get any benefits, etc. Now, if we're saying that they are so critical to the development of young minds, when are we going to, and I know it was supposed to be a gradual process of sort of phasing in grade R teachers, but it hasn't happened. It's not in the strat plan, so it's a serious omission. What is going to be done about that? Then the target that dealt with school management, so this is in program 3, the target that dealt with school management has largely been dropped. The only thing that is in school management, that deals with school management, is the SGBs. That's the only thing. Now, school management is much bigger than that, in my understanding, certainly. It deals with the principals, with the deputy principals. We've had a lot of talk about contracts, performance contracts for principals and deputy principals. We've also had talk about the teacher performance appraisals changing to, or the ICMS changing to teacher performance appraisals, and I don't know what for principals and deputy principals and the management. But there are no implementation targets at all. The Minister and Deputy Minister are saying this is going to happen. It's not in the strat plan at all. So school management is something that I would like to find out more about. And Chair, oh, not there. Okay, I'll just carry on. Okay. Just in terms of clarity, just 2 points of clarity. In Program 2, there's reference made to learners reaching the required literacy level and the required numeracy level. What is the required literacy level? What is the required numeracy level? In Program 4, there is reference made to a very basic level of infrastructure, 4.4.2 in the strategic plan, a very basic level of infrastructure. There are no norms and standards. The department is contesting the equal education case, as far as I understand it, with respect to infrastructure. So what does this strat plan mean by a very basic level of infrastructure that every school should have? Thank you, Acting Chair.
Thanks a lot for that, Honourable Tina. And I see we're allowed to ask our 5 questions next person. I was never allowed. Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. The presenter on Program 2 talks about the, he make mention that they never deliver full on library. And then he mentioned also that they are going to use the mid fund in municipality. I just want to know the time frame. And again, he talked about the multi-grade support measures for multi-grade with DVD. I just want to know where there are no electricity, what other measures or your plan B is. And then the other question is on Program 3. Chairperson, teachers, instead access teachers, I just want to check because there are lots of schools where learners are without teachers up to this stage. When are you going to speedily address this matter? And the last one is on Program 5, we talk of mobile teaching. Why is that cooking space is a challenge? I just want to know, you said that you deliver the mobile kitchen. It's going to be free or schools are going to contribute something? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. You have
covered?
You have
covered.
Fine. Next.
Chairperson, I want to be able to categorize my infrastructure. And this has to do with facilities in comprehensive high schools, if one still calls them comprehensive high schools, where a variety of subjects are offered. Now, I'm specifically addressing my issue to cases where technical subjects are offered. And of course, obviously, as you know, we have already discovered that there are a number of schools that do not have facilities for practical experience or practical teaching, if one would put it that way. My, the question is, how does the department allocate marks for practical training in a situation where the school does not have a workshop? They have tools and everything, are provided with the necessary tools, but there are no workshops. And of course, we have evidence about that. But at the end, I believe if somebody is doing, say, carpentry, well, in the classroom, he will know everything about wood, he will know everything about tools. But when it comes to producing something concrete in terms of what he is expected to produce, as somebody who has been, you know, exposed to this type of learning, obviously he won't do it because there are no workshops. So my question is about, you know, the department's intention to address this this problem, because it is a serious problem. Rather, person doing practical subjects, but really only theory, the theory part, and not the practical part. That is the first one. So we have examples that we can give about such schools that we know are having this problem. The second one is about overtime payment. I haven't heard anybody saying teachers will be paid overtime for sports activities. I don't know if it's going to be like that, but one begins to ask a question. If sports is going to be a very serious business in schools, what is going to happen? Will teachers volunteer to assist after school? I don't know. I just want to get an idea about what is actually in this age to plan about sports in schools. Because these days, you know, people speak a lot about overtime payment. If I have to do this beyond the normal hours, they have to pay me and so on. So just a comment about that. The last one is something that I heard over the radio, I think last week, about the community health care practitioners, I don't really call them that, but at any rate you understand what I mean, where there was an argument over the radio about them not being paid, or sometimes they get late payment. I know this might fall under social development, but I think since you are also partly involved, this issue of soap, you know, the answer was they are given, you know, a stipend for soap and something, vaseline, something like that. You know, to me it was very shameful to hear an answer like that, where a person will do work and then they say we'll give you just a few cents for soap and vaseline. But I know this is not really in education, but I'm sure you are partly part of it. Thank you.
I think that is not a question for us, for the community health practitioners. I think the community workers then don't answer the side. Who's next after Honorable? Yes, I think it's Honorable Smart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first apologize for arriving late. Half an hour late because I dealt with some of the issues in the Eastern Cape regarding temporary teachers.
next time I think I'll be very cross if the department says no, they have not
isolated generalist groups.
Mm.
If it's an important intervention, somebody must be able to say, we have isolated it, and this is the kind of impact that you are making. The other one relates to inclusive education. Look, there are times, Chairperson, when one can has a feeling that we might be paying lip service to this. And I'm going to tell you why. We are very strong on inclusive education. We are very strong on education of learners with special needs. But I mean, you go to schools. I come from the Limpopo province, and I can tell you, schools don't have therapy. Schools do not have therapy. And we're talking about screening and cleaning and all those things. Who does the screening? Shouldn't it just be some kind of a norm, a basic minimum requirement that when we do staff establishment, post establishment, we should have this therapy? Otherwise, where do we go? But also, when Dr. Mwilo was reading, he was saying, you know, some of the delivery things to the patient are not included in the report, and I say, well, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Because we're treating it as an afterthought. We're treating it as an afterthought. And maybe it's a reflection of the kind of society, what the attitude that society has towards differently abled people. We can't perpetuate it in this manner. So I think we just need a little bit more visible commitment. If it is not there, tell us. If it is there, maybe we are not seeing it, tell us that it is there. The other one relates to the ECD practitioners. And I'm glad that you are saying that they should have at least NQF level 4. Now my question is, will it be any NQF level 4, or maybe as a way of trying to standardize, trying to sort of regularize ECD sector? Have we identified some kind of qualification and say it is that qualification? Or teachers can just run around to go to any institution and get any NQF level 4? Because again, we have that, I think it was Honorable Lovemore,
yeah.
We have said something about conditions of teachers, of ECD practitioners. No uniform standards and all those things. Like he said, you know, people paid some of them. If Limpopo hears that people were paid after 2 months, they will say that they are very lucky. Because they get paid after 4 months and all those things. So just to say, let's professionalize this thing. If the head of state has said the kind of things that he said about ECD in our country, we need to professionalize it. We need to make sure that what is happening in every ECD center is more or less the same countrywide. The last one, Honorable Mr. Koja. Now, you see, this thing of ghost teacher, and a ghost teacher is a personal number. A good teacher is a pay point. And then with the advancement of IT that we have, should we still be having good teacher? Because I can tell you, good teacher is there, is a placeholder for a good teacher who would otherwise have been appointed. We say we have temporary teachers that can't be absorbed because there is no money. There is no money because money is going to go teacher. Are we going to see a drive? Maybe somebody will say, we give ourselves 3 months, we clean the system, there will be no ghost teacher in the country, and anybody who has appointed a ghost teacher, we must see something happen in that system. Because, you know, people have, you know, we hear principals, they are in councils, regional officials, they create these imaginary people, create imaginary account numbers, but it can be trained. Because the ghost teacher has completed a form. The ghost teacher has everything that an owner teacher has, except that the person doesn't exist.
I thank you for that last question, because I think it's very important. Because at schools, you can monitor what is happening. And I was happy when the Honorable Dekova put down disciplinary action. Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions spread over the two programs.
before I put my questions, let me just make this this general statement, which appreciates the challenge that the National Department has got through the constitutional arrangement of concurrent and exclusive power, because this alone seems to present the very real challenges to the National Department, which is concerned with monitoring at a large extent and leaving implementation to the provinces. Then, having said that, my passion is on program two. My passion is on assessment, because I argue that the provision of quality education really rests on this pillar, that is assessment of practitioners. Because you agree with me, Chair, that most of our schools, one person described them as black boxes, where nobody seems to know what is happening there. Now my question is, the assessment policy, which one is in place now? Assessment policy for both teachers and principals. I know you ask this question sometimes, and the response is no. It's in the chamber. It's being negotiated there,
yeah.
But it doesn't help us, because you look at provinces, you look at Eastern Cape, you look, and then we hear what the department say, but each week we're confronted with newspaper articles by renowned academia who are decrying the system of education. This assessment of our teachers, really, how are you dealing with it through the strategic plan? I would like to hear more. Then the last question on this program is on the curriculum. I don't know if I'm putting this correctly. Now, schools are responsible for choosing the combination of subjects. But recently, we have found that provinces have sent out circulars trying to tell principals which combinations they must do. They tell them, do away with what's this next thing? What? Yeah, during our times it was functional mathematics, which was either math or what. So there's a lot of confusion now down at the school level. Principals are resisting. They say, no, for goodness sake, we are responsible for our own competition subject. But in MECs are trying to say, no, this is what you must do. What's your take on that? Now, the last two questions from
the
program. who will draw salaries but sitting at home for years. How are you going to deal with this phenomenon of displaced principals which render schools dysfunctional? Thank you, Chair, for your understanding.
I think what you should add on there with the displaced principal, put in the educators too. Let me just do one thing. Honorable Mshwana, and then Honorable Crosby, and then Honorable Dina.
Yes, you are. Yes.
Okay, thank you. I have a question. I want to believe you can locate this thing to set the number two. The skills that people have are written in a paper, they get qualifications. But we have cases of dyslexia. It might not be big, but there are people who cannot read or write, no matter what it means, because they are dyslexia. Now, the challenge is that dyslexia cases grow up, and like any other human being, they want to have families, they want to work, they want to support their families. And without the students, it's very difficult to be employed. Anyway, I'm checking this program too. I don't know. It's time to locate how they can be assisted. But that if you go out there looking for a job at the end of all your schooling, it must not be a paper that tells the world that you are safe. Because if you can do something to them, and there's no free state to go to is there a chance? What I'm trying to ask you, are these programs giving any chance for people who can never read and write?
Yeah.
Yet they grow up, and after growing up, they have families, like they don't have family, they need to earn a salary. You need a certificate. And how do you get a certificate without going to the schools where you'll end up with a tangible? You have to have a kid. You can become a mechanic. And maybe one can set an example, it's only one can set an example of, you know, sometimes we have a sense in Norway through this union that you're talking about, in Norway and Denmark. And then they are able to train people to have skills. Skills will help you get the skills, but you don't necessarily have to be able to read and write and have gone through matrix. If this country is moving towards that skill, where we are going to make sure that if you are a person, you may be going to work, you can be accommodated. We can't say this day. Where do you locate such people? They may not be many, but they are here and they are very important. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. On board, welcome.
First, the teachers have been hard at trying to accommodate me. In appreciation, I don't have a question.
We'd like to hear what your views to gospel lectures talk to. On board, Nina.
Where we talk of multiple teaching. Yes, there is a debate.
document to the guidelines that have been, that I was promised to bring to the board. But Chair, what is going to be done about the question of arms? I don't have a session for the board. Really, when we look at arms, yes, we can regulate, we can have programs. That is where most of the time when you talk about this multi-thing, but is there any regulation around the issue of arms schools? I'll make a very practical example. In my constituency, there is a farm school which begins from grade R to grade 7. Mm-hmm. The farm owner has only given 2 rooms, I cannot say even 2 classrooms. And we sit here, we can say we are regulating the multi-grading, but really, and I don't think that's the only case that they, where our learners are subjected to such treatment throughout the country. How are we saying, yes, there is a farm school, but are there any regulations as to say, for that particular area to be granted such a school, 1, 2, and 3 must be made for the school to have, you know? Because really, you cannot say grade R to 7 can be contested in 2 small rooms, and you probably say teaching and then you're taking things in such a way. So I think around the question of farm schools, really, we need to get into a discussion also around that. Chair, there is a sub-program on program 2 where we talk of curriculum and the let me pronounce it that way. Let me pronounce it in my language. Chair, in that literacy program, learners get the certification up to level 1. I don't think we need to be satisfied as basic education as to say something is done on that level. Yes, there is something done, but what is our projection? From level 1 that we get out of that literacy program, do we see any progress of our learners? What are the links between the DBE and the Department of Higher Education and Training when it comes to other levels, like level 2 up to 4 on AET? I know it has been under the Department of Basic Education, but now it's higher education. So for us not to end up with this, can we see a link between these two departments as to say our contributing as education towards the improvement of illiteracy in the country? Lastly, check on program number 5. Chairperson, on program number 5, on sexual reproductive programs or education. There is an analysis that is there. I want to go more specific. Oh, let me start with teenage pregnancy. The analysis that we have is that we have got 2 provinces that are leading mostly in teenage pregnancy, that is Cape and Energy Mall. I don't know whether people there are more active
No, just refer to KwaZulu-Natal.
I don't know. I don't know whether people are more active in those provinces or what, but in that program, what plans are there? Because I feel these provinces need to be highly targeted, because we cannot stand on really the statistics that we're getting out of those provinces. A lot of our educators, a lot of our learners drop out through teenage pregnancy. So is there any plan to work towards those provinces? And lastly, on the sexual and reproductive education, there has been an article where parents are complaining, and to say most of them, I think Honorable Dutton has alluded to that, as to say, what end
in on the people that feel that whatever is being taught there does not contradict to the beliefs of what is happening at home, so that we don't get an exclusion on that one. Thank you, Mark, for that. I think on that one, there's a site within Port Elizabeth Metro where I think it was learners as young as 10 was given contraceptive. So I think it's important to address that one. And then I think when it comes to farm schools, I've just got some of the, I would like you to speak to the challenges of the closure or merger of farm schools, because we're having a lot of problems within the different provinces when it comes to that. Like we said, when it comes to farm schools, we could have that in writing, but just touch it briefly. Then what I would like, because it's going to be important for our report, is the progress on your representations made when it comes to sign language as an official language. I think the report has to speak to that, because at the moment arts and culture is busy with that. Then you have to speak to also the reduction of the actual class size, you know, because we need to know how far is the progress, because we have norms and standards in respect of class size in place. Then a question that came up in Parliament, the agreement for principals and deputy principals. I think it came from Bonshana when we were in Parliament. And then the rollout of motivational incentives for educators in the rural areas and those that are teaching skills like mathematics, science and technology. The Honourable Lathmore and even the Honourable DeCorvo spoke to ECD practitioners and the conditions, because we must know what is the progress, because we are told when it comes to condition of services in the farming chambers. And then whether we have sufficient budget for the maintenance of school infrastructure. I think those questions that I'm giving there will be important for our E-triple-R, to know what is happening. Well, certain questions came up in Parliament and then during the, to the department. Thank you. Let's start
the scholarship. Can I just interrupt for a moment? I'm just, my apologies. I am needed elsewhere, and I'm sorry. I really would like to hear the answers, but I'll put a question to the minister on this so the department can answer on my question. Thank you.
No, that will be in order, because I think you did ask the department previously a question around it. last year is in the budget book, she had said she would prioritize the establishment of a high level planning and delivery oversight unit. And it is in that context that I was moved from a formal program to have the delivery unit. And the delivery unit is meant to address many of the challenges that are being raised here, because it is meant to look at how policy actually finds expression at school level in the classroom and try and unblock the challenges in the value chain. And that is what the delivery unit does. The NIDU, on the other hand, does an independent assessment and provides reports on the state of education, looking at various levels within the system. But as has been said earlier, Chair, we would be happy to come back and make a full presentation on those 2 years. Thank you.
We'll continue now, Mr. Mwengi, on the case of next question.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, let me appreciate the interest of honorable members on program 2 in particular, and tell certain times in meeting when I know that your schedule is quite hectic throughout the year. I would plead that we be afforded the opportunity also to come and make a full presentation and on some of the issues that might not be addressed. We'll also attempt to provide information in a written form so that whatever shortcomings arise out of my response, then at least the written responses should be able to assist. Starting with the first question about findings from ANA and what are we doing to improve. The first thing is that ANA has revealed the strategic importance and leverage of using assessment data because it's a diagnostic tool. And we've been engaging with assessment data from the National Senior Citizen Games, but the cohorts of learners who went through ANA indicated or stressed the importance of using assessment data to intervene meaningfully in your curriculum delivery. As we all know, that assessment and teaching is integrated in the classroom. The two are not clinically distinct. And therefore, from management level and from a practitioner point of view, we have affirmed the importance of using assessment data to model your teaching even at the level of the classroom. The extent to which you are able to assess gives valuable feedback in terms of your teaching and learning at the level of the classroom. We have encapsulated this in the literacy and the numeracy plan. And it is one of those important instruments that I would believe that time permitting we should come and share with honorable members to take you through the plan that we have. And I think I did make it a request in previous meetings. In terms of inclusive education, again, I appreciate the interest of honorable members on this subject. There's no doubt, and needless to point out that that's why the manager responsible accompanied this delegation. I knew that this question would not escape this meeting. And therefore, all that I want to say here, honorable members, is that the issue of inclusive education is reflected in Action Plan 2014 towards schooling 2025. It is also reflected in the annual performance plan, page 13. Strategic objective 4.2.8. Maybe the question where I need to concede is to say it's not adequately reflected. It does not reflect issues of the what we are doing in terms of South African sign language. It does not reflect other efforts that are running in terms of developing a framework for learners who are intellectually disabled. It does not reflect our efforts in terms of developing a curriculum for schools of skills. There I concede. But templates of annual performance plan are usually determined by learners. And I'm not
away from the responsibility. Planners determine what has to get into the plan, and usually the rest will have to populate the plan. And it therefore says that we could fit in quite a lot, and I agree that as it stands, it might give a misleading impression that we are not doing much in terms of inclusive education. Well, in respect of again, of children with minor disabilities, well, it relates to the same question to say we don't seem to be doing much. But I must say that this responsibility struggles, it has actually migrated from program 2 to program 5. That's why colleague Gugun Debele, when she talked about, when she spoke to the implementation of SIAS, screening, assessment, and identification strategy. She provided quite detailed information in that respect, because that, in terms of the dealing with the issues of mainstream schooling in terms of inclusive education, that's what we are mainly focusing on. In terms of curriculum, we are focusing on an approach of diversity to teaching. In other words, how do you provide for learners with different learning disabilities in a mainstream school? From a curriculum point of view, that's what we are doing. And I agree, again, it's not reflected yet. It's something that is encapsulated in the web plans of line function management. The issue of grade R teachers. Honorable Chairperson, that's why I said the resolution of the recent conference which was held in East London are quite instructive to both DBE and social development. And the resolutions of that conference said you need to start finalizing issues around conditions of service of grade of ECD practitioners, including those who are responsible for grade R. Those who are responsible for grade R who are attached to schools, it becomes fairly easy to deal with them. It becomes complicated to deal with those that are a responsibility of social development. Now, the conference says, Department of Basic Education and Social Development, finalize this matter as soon as possible. And we will be acting on the resolutions of that conference. Safe to say that indeed, as honorable members indicated, this is a matter that we've been occupied with for quite some time. I do concede that at some point we need to reach finality around conditions of service for ECD practitioners, not only for the R, for 0-4, both for the development and the Department of Education. Learners reaching the required level of achievement. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, the required level, we use a rating scale of one to seven, and the required level is 3. Expressed in percentage terms is 50 to 59%. So that is the required level of achievement in terms of literacy and literacy that you are talking about in respect of our mission. And then the provision of libraries, the MIG, Municipality Infrastructure Grant Fund. What is the time frame? Well, the meeting between Arts and Culture and DBE, which was led by the two ministers, happened last month. And the time frame that we have is that planning, ensuring that with the commencement of the next financial year, we are on board as Arts and Culture and municipalities in improving access in terms of library services. That's the target that was agreed upon by the two ministers, that we must plan for making sure that the rest of municipalities is the next financial year. Arts and Culture, it starts from this financial year. So we have been engaged with the Department of Arts and Culture. Multi-grade DVDs, what happens where there's no electricity? It's a $1 million question. Minister, the Minister is quite clear on this one. If you can't provide it on the ICT platform, then you must provide for it on hard information. In other words, hard copy. In other words, if information is not available on soft copy, then you must provide for it in another form, like hard copy. The Minister said schools should not be disadvantaged because they don't have the and we have started to do that, particularly in Limpopo. Those that do not have access to our tutor portal, we produce the information and make it accessible on hard copy. In terms of math, how do we engage NGOs such as the Math Foundation South Africa? And Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member, the Honorable Member is spot on. My name is on there. I do attend meetings of this. I've never doubted your extensive network in terms of intelligence. Honorable Member. But on a serious note, we have provided a copy of our MSC strategy to the NGO. The NGO has looked at it, they've critiqued the strategy, and they've given us feedback. There's a meeting scheduled between ourselves and the NGO. I'm in regular contact with the president of the NGO, Mr. Chairperson. So we are looking forward to inviting them to the summit as well, to come and help us to deal with the big elephant called Method 9 in particular, in terms of turning it around. Inclusive education, staffing, norms, therapies, and so on. We do have norms and standards for staff provision to even the schools, to the best of my recollection. But I do concede that, again, and I'm not running away from the place, challenges of concurrent functions. Are something that one can really point out, because you can only persuade provinces to need these norms. But in terms of making sure that if they don't need these norms, Section 100 does not really indicate exactly what should happen. And I'm really looking forward, Honorable Chairperson and members, to that day when you put us under one roof with our colleagues to come and deal with these challenges around concurrent functions. But norms are there. Norms are there. But indeed, they are not complied with. They are not complied with. But in the meantime, we have also been encouraged to work with health and social development to try and sort these services. But we'll all know that in special schools, you require these services to be resident 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because anything can happen midnight, early hours of the morning, this service must be there. So that's the risk that you are sitting with. I'm sure we'll try and demonstrate our visible commitment in terms of inclusive education, but I've already considered that in terms of the documents that we are working with, they do not fully reflect what we are doing in that sector. ECD. Qualifications, we have, in terms of, we are saying N2F level 4 is the lowest qualification in terms of the training that DBE is providing as our responsibility to 0 to 4 practitioners. It's the barest minimum. There's an RQV level, RQV 30, which will be provided for by the, I think if I'm not mistaken, the University of Nelson Mandela, which is at a higher level. But we are saying the barest minimum is NQF level 4, the NQF level 4 that we all know, with all the requirements that are attached to it. And the training is provided by you through provinces. And we monitor that training. We do it in conjunction with the ETD. So that's how the training is monitored and regulated. And I accept the advice that we need to professionalize the sector. We fully take that responsibility. And again, one of the resolutions of the conference which was recently held in Islanda, that we need to move and speed what information has to be taken. Those are some of the instructions from the conference. Then on an ongoing basis, we'll be updating on that one. Progress that we are making in meeting those imperatives. The issue of subject choices, directives given by in fact, directives come from BDE. A circular was signed by the Director General from the observation made by Council of Education Ministers. Let me say, Honorable Member, 15% of our performance in the NSC accounts to subject choices. Now, what does it mean? If we got our subject choices right, our results will improve by about 15%. That's what the researchers and analysts are saying. If, for instance, you push learners to take science and mathematical literacy and life sciences and the language and the rest of it, that learner will be able to pass and probably perform very well in terms of the NSC. But that learner will never be able to do anything. Will never be able to do many things. Because to start with, mathematical literacy is for social use. The decision taken by this country was that future citizens of this country must take mathematics in one form or the other. If you don't take mathematics, but at least you must go to mathematical literacy. To make sure that at least you are able to live a meaningful citizenry life. You are able to manage your budget from a mathematical literacy point of view. But in terms of gateway and where skills need are calling for, mathematics is the way to go. And I hope that we'll get an opportunity to come and share very startling but interesting revelations around what is happening in the system. In terms of participation rate and success rate in mathematics, from 2008, the uptake in mathematics has gone down. The introduction of mathematical literacy has undermined the uptake of mathematics. Because increasingly principals push learners to take mathematical literacy to improve the overall performance of school, but to the performance of mathematics, both in participation and success rate has gone down. And I wish we could have the opportunity to come and demonstrate that. So subject choices are very, very important, and we are saying it's mandatory. We have issued that circular signed by the DC. That subject combinations should be in accordance with that circular. Anything else should not be allowed. So that is the view of DBE, Honorable Chairperson. Programs for people who cannot read and write, but their skills, that is what is contained in the green paper for post-schooling, where Minister Nzimande is saying he's intending to put out, in other words, your current other centers are going to be transformed into centers that will help for people who cannot read and write, but also recognize prior learning. You might not be able to read and write, but you have the skill. But there should be ways of recognizing your learning. Chairperson, I don't know. Maybe I must. I've talked about multi-grade schooling, and maybe the rest. Karikude, in terms of learners, well, we are working with higher education and training, so that when you finish NQF level 4, then could at least be moved to ABET level 1 and other level 2. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, I'd like to move to the teacher section because I think a number of the other questions deal with that particular branch. And I'll be able to guide at that time from the chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me start first by concurring with Honorable Smile on the need for an integrated plan for the teachers for the country, not only to talking about issues of attraction and retention, but to talk on issues of demand, supply, and utilization. Because that is very, very, very key and fundamental. Because teachers are the most important resource we have in the field. Therefore, it is important that we need to ensure that we have the right teacher at the right school in terms of supply and demand. Now, the reality of the matter is that you raise the issue on management of the processes. Because to manage this particular responsibility effectively and efficiently, there are processes and procedures and sources of information as well as management tools that you deal with issue of compliance in terms of the implementation thereof. Because what you are referring to in terms of the Eastern Cape, you may not find in other provinces or in specific provinces. It's a management issue, which calls on us to really come up with a management plan that I referred to, which are guidelines that HEDCOM has directed us to develop in order to deal with this particular problem. Because you might be looking at it with regard to the Eastern Cape, but there were some signs in terms of Limpopo. Because the question that you raised about that there are classes without teachers, it is a manifestation of the management of those tools. Now, what we have done with regard to that particular aspect is that we had two principles that guided us towards the conclusion of an agreement at the PRC in the public particular. One, it is the protecting of teaching and learning time. Two, is about ensuring that in each and every class there should be a teacher. Hence, we went into an agreement at the level of the PRC because there were serious problems in Limpopo. That is why the two provinces are under Section 101B. It is because of how those matters, those resources, have been managed. But fortunately, there are processes in place to ensure. And I'm happy that you have given me a note on areas of focus where there are these particular incidences, because there is currently a management plan to ensure that there is deployment of teachers into schools in Limpopo currently as we speak. Part and parcel of the issue that you raised is this phenomenon of the ghost teacher. Now, a ghost teacher is a fictitious entity that has been created on person to generate an income. Now, there are various, we've learned from the reports that we received at HEDCOM from KZN, Limpopo, as well as Northwest, on the study that they've conducted to look as to who are these ghost teachers and where are they? And what they've discovered is how we are utilizing PESA, wherein substitute teachers, as well as those teachers who are in examination, are given personal numbers. Now, when you look around across in a specific point in time, you'll find that you have ghost teachers. It's on how we're utilizing personal numbers. Hence, this is what we've discovered. There was an issue that said there are 200 ghost teachers in Limpopo. Now the provincial department of Limpopo conducted a study to say who are these ghost teachers and where do they come from. They found that that is why we're going to have a meeting with Treasurer, because we're using two systems, it's Treasurer as well as Bulletin. Because Treasurer has got a system in place of determining, of looking into human resource within departments, and they use that particular system. Now we're going to have a meeting with National Treasury to look into the compatibility of the two systems, because people talk about ghost teachers that openly, but we did consider the fact that there were instances where there were ghost teachers, because
is how personal is being manipulated by specific persons. Hence, I spoke about a program on business intelligence, which assists the managers in the provinces now, because they're going to conduct the training up to the level of the provinces, so that they can be able to detect these particular tendencies, that people can be able to mismanage the person in order to generate an income. There's another matter that which I wanted to concur with you on is about the definition of excess educators, because these teachers are not moving from school A to school B. That generates a double parking, because school B needs a teacher, and that teacher is not moving from school A to school B, and that's a problem. That is why there are problems in the Eastern Cape about temporary teachers. It's because of non-compliance with resolution, the implementation thereof. Because if that teacher does not move from school A to school B, the school B needs a teacher, because that teacher does not move from that particular school. It's creating a problem, a bottleneck, in terms of the bloatedness of the compensation of employees in the process. Now, there's a two-phase question that has been also been raised around teacher accountability, which is a key strategy to improve accountability in schools, is to ensure that principals are able to manage their schools effectively. Secondly, it requires principals to be empowered with tools to manage various processes and activities that impact on the quality of teaching and learning, as well as the quality of management and governance. I want to respond to that question that has been raised on twofold. One, in terms of programmatical, what is it that we are doing? We have already trained more than 4,000 principals through FH program, and those 4,000 principals have qualified already, and that program is continuing. But in terms of accountability, there are two instruments that are at the level of the ELRC currently, two collective agreements, which are actually based on how to manage performance in the system. One is about teacher performance appraisal. Two is about the performance management system for principals as well as deputy principals. Now, this performance evaluation system are critically important, because we are engaged as the industry to find a solution on the matter. We are even going to an extent of going to the level of bilateral. Now, once there is a conclusion on the matter, it is easy for us to have, once we've got collective agreement, you then can be able to factor in performance measures, so that you can be able to say how many, you can come up with specific indicators once there's a conclusion in terms of those collective agreements, because you shall have those instruments ready for us to implement. Then you'll be able to come up with performance indicators. On the matter of displaced educators, and principals, it's a very serious matter which also contributes to this issue of bloating the compensation of employees. The Department of Education is partnering now, is working with the Education Labor Relations Council into dealing with all these particular cases of a principal being chased away by the community as one aspect, or of tensions amongst teachers themselves, which results in a specific teacher being displaced, because they are the body, a mandatory body to deal with these particular cases. We have indicated to them that these cases need to be resolved urgently, because it creates a system where you need to put a principal in a specific school, because this particular principal is displaced. In other instances, these principals that are displaced or teachers that are displaced are absorbed in district offices.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that is the reality. Mm-hmm. And this thing causes tension. And if someone wants to create an animal in a school, because that person wants to be in the second office or district offices, creates a similar tension. This is precisely why we've said it is important that we must find a speedy resolution on these matters through the ERC processes. In terms of the policy, that have been the guidelines of the district, you are correct. That we have been having guidelines for a longer period of time. Hence, we could not ensure that the system itself is able to manage things properly. Because it's a guideline. There's no policy. It cannot be enforceable across the system. So that is why I think that we concur with you that we needed to provide you with a management plan after we have received all the submissions by May, so that policy is being implemented. I think once people have made submission, we'll be able to give you progress report with regard to that matter. Honorable Madisha has raised a question around why do we do continuous development of educators? One simple response is about how do you ensure or promote learner performance or capacitate the teachers themselves. Because you cannot simply stop and say, no, okay, these people are qualified. Look, there's been some curriculum changes. Now, we needed to have programs to assist educators in the implementation of the curriculum. That's why we spoke about the training on PEPs. We started with the foundation phase as well as grade 10. In last year, we needed to do that as a system. It's part and parcel of teacher development. But on the long term, when I raise the question very, very closely, it's about supply and demand. You have trained this particular educator because you have identified a need to train this particular educator. Where do you deploy this educator to? Because of the particular need. That is why I said we are dealing with teacher profiling. Because if you've got teacher profiling in the system, you'll be able to do the proper matching to say this particular school needs this particular skill. Therefore, this particular educator here is required in this particular school. I think that is how we need to manage that. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think because we do have the presence of the other presenters here as well, if we could be just allowed to complete a really brief response to the inclusive education
mm-hmm.
question, but I would suggest then that you guide us in terms of how much more time we have available
oh.
before we take the next block of questions. Mm-hmm. There are quite a few more.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. I think most of the questions have been covered by DDG, Mr. Mueli. I think one question that may not have been spoken to is the one that speaks to the representations in terms of raising the official status of the sign language. I think that's the one that has not been addressed. Maybe one would start by stating that in terms of the South African Schools Act, the sign language is recognized as an official language that can be used for teaching and learning as a language. And then, so in other words, from an education perspective, the sign language is recognized as an official language because it's in the Act.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, in terms of effort to make representations and make and raise awareness in terms of its official status, to be among the 11 languages or to be part of the 11 languages, in the ministerial task team that was established to develop the South African Sign Language curriculum as a subject, the task team has members from, has representations from the Department of Art and Culture. It has also a representative from PENSAL. So we believe that through the participation of those officials or representatives from those bodies, that debate can also be escalated to raising the official status of the language itself, especially once the development of the curriculum has been completed. One believes that that can be taken further in terms of raising the official status. I think that's the response that we can offer.
We seem to have covered most of these questions. I just want to check issues like the mobile kitchens, etc., the infrastructure, as well as branch SNG Center Program 5 and school nutrition. Those are things that we can respond to, I think, fairly briefly, but also I think the others would probably require follow ups in writing or in the individual sessions that you requested. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Where we can reshape your room.
Just briefly, Chairperson, the questions that Honorable Darcy and Honorable Gina asked are questions where they requested a much more detailed response around the session and the practical program. And so we will do that, but just to indicate that the starting point with that program is the CAPS document and the requirements stated in CAPS and the HIV and AIDS strategy document that was consulted on. So there wouldn't be anything that we put in there that contradicts those policy documents. However, I agree with the honorable member that it is going to be a very emotional and sensitive conversation, and it's a conversation that needs to be had over and over again, and it's not going to be sorted out just by the lesson plan. I think it's a conversation around values that we believe we should aspire to in South Africa, and the role of parents in ensuring those values. The question around the mobile kitchen, the point I was making was that we identified the issue of space as a problem, and we've used our relationship with partners to ensure that we chip at that backlog. So every time there's an offer from a company that could provide kitchens, because we have a sense of the numbers, we do provide those numbers. And they are as part of the school nutrition program, through the school. I agree with Honorable Kumanga around the issue of the facilities. The three DGs of SRSA, COPTA, and our DG are looking at how to look at municipalities and how they make the facilities available. But it's been a conversation that's been happening for a very long time, and that we also believe needs to be finalized. In relation to the training of PE teachers, it is part of CAPS, and that was the advantage that we have in including PE in the curriculum. So that's covered. The additional training is around the code-specific programs. I can't answer Honorable Kanyako's questions around the community health practitioners in the school. Again, all I can assure you is that it's definitely not Department of Basic Education. And that is part of the agreement with the trade union. The participation of teachers is voluntary.
Honestly,
yes.
In
the
first
I think one important to do on this one is okay, Honorable Atmore. Looking, we had a meeting with sports, and education when it comes to the physical education within the school. And the setup that we have now is totally different to what we had in the previous years. And I think within your policy, you have just checked your own policy, that when it comes to, they've got a remuneration, because this has to go to the bargaining council. Just check your policy on sport, and then come back to us on that.
Honourable, do you want to say something? And I'll give it to Honourable Madisha.
Thank
and
you.
And Honourable Dekobo, because we came to a conclusion what we're going to do about education.
Yes.
I just wanted to add on to the infrastructure. I asked the question with respect to 4.4.2, what is meant by a very basic level of school infrastructure? And
yes.
I think that's essential
that
we,
yeah,
we get that answer. Thank
mm-hmm.
you, Chair.
And then the other thing too that I think someone asked on the infrastructure when it comes, you know, within the community when it comes to school sports. Because there too a person has to remember that I think the minister spoke nicely, wisely about it in one of the previous meetings we had with her, that there's beautiful community structures, but then schools have to pay exorbitant prices to use that infrastructure. But let us listen to Honourable Madisha and Honourable Takobo.
I'm just showing that my neighbour here.
All right, first Mishishi, Honourable Mishishi.
Yeah, if I were to use that,
all right.
The number of points that I have spoken of them, yes. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to go into them, even one, it would take a great deal of time.
Mm-hmm.
I therefore would say, let's take your point and
sorry,
say, yeah, we can drink, and then when we come back, we'll be able to take your point.
I would like to take the same line, but maybe this special event here.
Yes.
It is on the issue of the.
Just like now, it's awesome.
I think it's a performance contract.
Yes.
Or whatever it is called. For principals and deputies. And I know that we don't want to do collective bargaining in Parliament. But as I said, this collective agreement was signed, I think, if I'm not mistaken, on the 4th of April 2008. That's for principals and deputy principals. Now, negotiations have been going on since then.
Yes.
I think that somewhere the department must tell us where is the suffering from. Even if it's just to inform ourselves. I mean, every time we've been told, no, it's in the bargaining chamber. It's in the bargaining chamber. I think we have vested interest because some of us hold the view that it will change the shape of education. If principals and deputy principals were to be put on that one, it will, you know, the quality of education will just improve in leaps and bounds.
Mm.
So we have vested interest. I don't think we are personally not impressed now with the answer that is still not. I mean, it was signed by Honorable Pando at the time. So I think we need some kind of analysis so that department tell us where are you starting. And it's from your side.
I think that will be important. And even when it comes to the ECD too, because it's all about social development, but all when it comes to ECD. Because like I said, when I spoke to it, that, you know, that remains quite some time in the bargaining council. And we're not getting satisfaction. And people on the ground, the petitioners are complaining, you know, when it comes to their payment, etc., and their condition of services. I think what we're going to do now, because there's people that have statistics from us. Mrs. Carlson, we are going to close the meeting. And we're going to reschedule it for next week, Tuesday. Because tomorrow we're having
another meeting.
Yes, we need to have a meeting. Because we need to reschedule that meeting. Because there's still a lot of questions that have to be answered. Because people will not